Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. I'm Jeff Gamet. Today is Thursday, March 9th, 2017. And with me today, I have John Martellaro. How are you, John?
Who, me?
Yes, you.
I guess it's me. I'm here.
Awesome. Glad you're here. Dave Hamilton, how's it going for you?
It goes. Yeah, happy to be here with the John Martellaro.
Yeah, not just any John Martellaro, but the John Martellaro.
That's you're right. Personal astrophysicist, folks.
That's right. You know, I feel like my head is in the stars when you're around, John.
I get all starry-eyed.
Yeah. Ah, hugs.
I'm a star.
That's right. Hey, we have a sponsor today, and that sponsor is iMazing, and they have a discount for you guys. And because I'm just ornery like that, I'm going to make you wait a little while before I tell you what that discount is. Also, because there's other stuff that I want to make sure that we get to today, including FBI Director James Comey and his statements that he made at a Boston College, Boston University,
Boston College.
Cybersecurity conference.
If you confuse that for people that go to either one, especially BC, you'll have a problem. So,
and that's why I wanted to make sure that I got it right.
Yeah, it was a BC cybersecurity conference, Boston College.
Yeah, because if I get that wrong, that honorary doctorate, it'll never come.
No, that's right. That's right. You always got to be playing for the end game.
That's right. So anyhow, there's one line in particular that came out of his presentation that really got everyone's feathers ruffled, so to speak. And it's when he said, there is no such thing as absolute privacy in America. There is no place outside of judicial reach. And a lot of people took that to mean that our government is just plowing through all of our private data and all of our private information, everything that's private in our lives, just roughshod, and which is, I don't think is the case.
Yeah, I've been thinking about that this morning since I read it, and I don't take that as a statement about how Americans should be constantly spied on at the government's whim, as you might take it. The way I interpret that, and it's just my way of thinking, is that there's something he's after. There's something he wants. There's an end goal in mind. There's some troubling thing going on. There's somebody has a phone, or some group of people have a phone, and he needs to know what's going on in order to pursue a criminal investigation. And he sees this as a tool for him to be able to get that investigation to succeed.
You know, I think it's a little bit broader than that, but we're totally on the same page, John. I don't think there's a specific investigation. I think there are many investigations that the FBI is conducting where they feel that their job would be a lot easier if they could work around the encryption on people's smartphones.
I'll never forget what Cindy Cohn, though, said. She was on background mode a while back last fall. She said, we need to enter a conversation with the government and have a mutual agreement through lawmakers and law about where we're going to draw the line. Because if you don't do that, then the government just keeps drawing the line where it wants to. What do you think, Dave?
I actually think that that's a very wise and reasoned way to approach all of this, is that this conversation needs to keep happening so that it doesn't ever fall out of control. You know, it follows that principle, that which is monitored is managed, right? And I mean, usually when I use that, it's on like our small business show podcast where we're talking about actual business stuff at businessshow.co, if I'm going to bother to give it a plug. But it totally makes sense here. It needs to be regularly discussed and reviewed, and something that is in the public eye. The good news is now, as opposed to maybe 20 years ago, most people are aware of, and I say most, maybe I should say many, people are aware of how this might affect them personally. And and that, I think, is a really good thing, because 20 years ago, all of the principles were basically the same, but most people couldn't. It was hard for people to envision where this line would be crossed in a way that it would affect them personally. But now, with all of us having these phones that have so much personal data in a way that other people can access it, as opposed to, you know, it's in my head, or, you know, I keep my calendar on a piece of paper here and I keep this on a piece of paper there, and I can just destroy those, right? I mean, I throw it away and it's really gone. You know, trashing something from your desk to your trash can, technically, yeah, they could fish it out of, you know, the trash at the street. But there's a level at which that data is then truly inaccessible to anyone, including you. Whereas stuff that's on your phone, you know, I always say to my kids, the internet is like Las Vegas. What happens on the internet stays on the internet forever.
Mm-hmm.
And that's true of your cloud backups and all of those things that aren't intentionally posted, you know, for public consumption. So, yeah, I think not only is the statement that you recounted there, John, an accurate one and a wise one for us to follow, but it, I think it resonates with a far greater percentage of the population now than it used to.
The other thing that Cindy Cohn said, did I mention she's the executive director of the Electronic Frontier Foundation? She said, if you have a society without certain privacies, you have a society without any freedom.
Yeah.
And there are some things that just we have to declare to be private, because if you don't, what happens is that the government eases itself into a situation where it comes to question anything that's exposed.
Mm-hmm.
Can I ask you about the definition of privacy, though? Or private, not privacy, but the definition of something being private. If you and I have a conversation, you know, about it, maybe a better way to look at it is if you were my doctor, right? And you and I have a conversation about, you know, a medical issue that I have. Or frankly, you know, if we're both colleagues at the same company like we are, and we have a conversation about something that is only relevant to our company and we don't want the general public to know, that is private, but it is not unreachable by the government.
Right. There's a difference between private and privileged. So the conversation that you and I could have about Mac Observer internal business that we don't want to share with other people, that's definitely a private conversation. The conversation that you have with your doctor about that awkward burning thing that's happening, that's privileged.
And but in either case, if we had this conversation, say, via email, that data is at some level readable by other people. Now,
yeah, there's no expectation of privacy there.
There should not be an expectation of privacy there. That's right. If you email something to someone, I mean, even if I email you something encrypted, right? Theoretically, I'm sending it believing that you have a way of decrypting what I've sent you. And if you have a way of decrypting it, then that means that data could be gathered by, frankly, anyone, but certainly by a government agency that can compel you to decrypt the data in the course of an investigation or something with a search warrant, you know, whatever that turns out to be.
Mm-hmm.
And it happens all the time. And it's not just criminal investigations. It's things like litigation civil litigation for a company or something, right?
Mm-hmm.
Where it's like, okay, now you have you're going through the discovery phase and you need to turn over all this stuff. And it's like, okay, well, half the stuff you turned over is encrypted. We need the password, and they can, in many cases, reasonably ask for that and probably hold you in contempt of court if you don't provide it.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
So in that sense, what Director Comey said is true. There is no absolute privacy, but he wants to make that like a complete thing where we lose the ability to keep our encrypted data encrypted. And what he wants is back doors.
Yeah.
And that's where the problem comes in. Because right. Like we've said so many times, a back door is not an exclusive thing. If you create a back door for the FBI and the CIA and whatever intelligence agency. You've created a backdoor that other governments and hackers, other criminals can use. All they have to do is figure out how to get through the hoops to do it, and that's it. And
yeah, that's a key distinction. We discussed that a lot last spring, about a year ago, when the FBI and the Apple crossed swords. Mm-hmm. If you have information on your phone that you want to keep secure and private against evil people, then you have to have absolute security. If the government suspects you, has strong evidence that convinces a court that you've engaged in criminal activity, they can get a warrant and properly investigate and compel you to provide information about your password so that they can investigate with other evidence and the convincing of a court and a warrant. So that seems to be two separate issues in my mind. And so we want to keep our phones secure without backdoors, because there's a lot of guys out there, bad guys, who want to munge around and capture things on your phone.
Sure. And it extends beyond the data on your phone, because once you have compromised encryption as a whole by creating backdoors, now you have problems like, what about the security for credit card transactions online?
Right. If there's a backdoor, then not only can information be taken out, but it might be able to be put in, like malware that can grab information, like you said, encrypted credit card information before it goes through the encryption process on a transaction.
Yeah. So
credit card data is the thing that I am least concerned about, to be perfectly honest.
No, I totally get that. But for the average consumer, that might be the key thing for them.
The key thing just to understanding the problem.
It's sort of a metaphor for the whole technical problem.
Mm-hmm. I like it. Yep. I like that. Yeah.
But I'm with you. It's lower on my concern list. Yeah. So, John, I think you nailed it with your interview with Cindy Cohen, that the conversation needs to be ongoing. So on one hand, it really feels uncomfortable that Director Comey was making these statements. But on the other hand, it's keeping the conversation going. And that's a good thing. And we need to be aware, we need to be involved, we need to be vigilant to make sure that the protections that we want are there, and that no one is secretly undermining what we as a society want.
And that's a confusing situation. The complexity there and the duality there is often confusing in public discussion, blogs, and news.
Yes. So what that tells me is that we will be returning to this topic at some point, probably many times. And I'm glad that we're all in a position where we can discuss this at a technical and intelligent level, but also in a way that hopefully the average person that isn't familiar or comfortable with these technologies will be able to understand too. And with that, we have a sponsor, and that sponsor is iMazing 2. And what makes iMazing 2 just a wonderful little happy dance of an app on your Mac is that all the things that you really wish that you could do to easily move content back and forth between your iPhone or your iPad and your computer, you can just do with iMazing 2. It gives you an easy-to-use interface so that you can do things like extract a chat conversation and save it, or a voicemail message. You can save those things directly out through iMazing. Have a song that you lost? Okay, if it's still on your iPhone, well, now you have an easy way to go grab it. And if you need to put content back onto your iPhone or iPad, no problem. You can do that too. And it's just this great little conduit tool to get everything around just the way you need. And it's a tool that I'm so glad that I have on my Mac, because it really does come in handy a lot. And I'd love it to be on your Mac too. So here's what you can do. If you go over to the iMazing website, go to imazing.com/TDO. And when you go to that special page, first, it lets the iMazing team know that you heard about the app here on our show, and they like to know that that we've got this wonderful relationship going. And then it also gets you access to that discount that I teased at the beginning of the show. And it's a 20% discount. So you can download the app for free to try it out. But when you want to buy it, you need to use that URL, imazing.com/TDO, so that you can get your 20% off. So it takes an app that for a single user is $39.99, makes it $31.99. And I love saving money. It's an awesome tool. It's a great price, even at regular price, but you guys get that 20% discount. So go check it out, imazing.com/TDO. And thank you to iMazing too for being our sponsor today. All right, John, I wanted you on the show today, not just because I really enjoy talking with you and getting your opinion, but because I have to just come right out and ask, why in the world did you review an HP PC?
Yeah, what the heck, man? Don't you know what we do here at TMO?
There is a phenomena going on. There is, as we observe, a lack of interest and a lack of shipping products, standalone, headless, desktop, powerful Macs in the style of the Mac Pro. At one time, Apple was very much into the Pro market with both mobile machines, the MacBook Pro, and the desktop machines, the Mac Pro. But the Mac Pro hasn't been updated since it was announced almost 4 years ago. And it appears, and this is the Apple angle for our site, that Apple has lost interest in supporting these kinds of desktop powerful workstations for creative and technical professionals. I have observed over the last 6 months that both Microsoft and Hewlett-Packard have noticed this as well and have made a technical and marketing and sales decision to take this market back from Apple, or take what share Apple already has with a new breed of PC, whether it's a Surface Studio from Microsoft or whether it's an HP Z workstation or this beautiful little mini workstation from Hewlett-Packard called the Z2 Mini. And this is just part of the wooing of the creative and technical professionals back into the PC fold. And the way they can do that is with great hardware, aspirational hardware. Many of the readers look at these products and they go, wow, I wish I could run macOS on this great hardware. And the other thing that's happened is that Windows 10, unlike Windows 8, which was an unmitigated disaster, Windows 10 is a passable, usable, not so awful operating system that allows you to get real technical work done. Millions of people already use Windows PCs for scientific work, for visualization. And so I started talking to Hewlett-Packard, and they said, how would you like to take a look at one of these computers? And they made it very clear. They told me point blank in an email, we are going after Apple. And so this is an Apple issue, an Apple situation for our readers. And I thought that they would be interested in seeing the kind of beautiful, strong, powerful, inexpensive, aspirational hardware that they're using to go after Apple. And that's the angle.
So when you were done checking out this computer, testing it out, did you feel like this was a valid alternative for Mac users?
It depends on how you feel about Windows 10. Of course, this machine also runs Linux. It runs SUSE and Red Hat Enterprise and probably all the other distributions. But Hewlett-Packard has certified a select group of Linux distribution. So if you're a scientist and you're using Linux in the lab, you know, you could put Linux on this machine and you would have a really great computer. It kind of depends on how you feel about your architecture at home and at work in the business, whether you see this as an add-on machine, a machine that can supplement what you're doing. Because for most Apple customers who are, you know, Apple fans and have Macintoshes and iPads and iPhones. It's not practical to make a wholesale change in their infrastructure and all the investments that they've made. However, for those people who are running small businesses and they need to upgrade their equipment, or for a scientist who needs a particular kind of hardware and wants to be able to connect multiple displays. In this case, this little computer that weighs 4.5 pounds can drive 6 HD displays or 4 4K displays.
Wow.
If they're thinking about, you know, introducing this kind of equipment into the university or into a laboratory or a research department or a law firm or a small business, this could be a usable supplement or addition as an alternative to the gap that's been produced by Apple.
All right, so we are out of time, but I have one last question for you. And
do I want to keep it? Yes, I want to keep it, but I can't.
Okay, so apparently I have two questions for you. Now, the other question is, what do you see as the bigger threat to Apple in the pro computer space? Is it Apple, or is it companies like HP trying to take Apple's business?
Well, I don't know. I mean, Apple's opened the door. It's apparently showing disinterest. The way you show interest in a market is by shipping products, supporting your customers, having a conversation with your customers about those products. That's not happening. So I wouldn't characterize Apple as a threat to themselves, because they're pulling in a lot of money in other market areas. But there's certainly money on the table, and Hewlett-Packard and Microsoft are interested in that money, and they're going to take it. And these are two companies that are strong in the enterprise to begin with. I mean, Hewlett-Packard makes supercomputers for the national labs and for research agencies. So this is just part of their suite of, you know, appealing to government, science, enterprise. And so there's money to be made here, and they're going to take it. So
could you theoretically Hackintosh this thing and run Mac OS on it?
I don't know. Several of the readers, both in my first article when it was released back in December and this article, have fantasized about running Mac OS on it. It might be doable. Technically, I'm not sure.
Yeah. All right. Well, with that, we really are out of time. So, John, thank you for being here today.
You're very welcome.
And Dave, thank you for being here as well.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, and thank you to iMazing, too, for being our sponsor today. Head over to the iMazing website. That's iMazing.com/TDO. And check out iMazing, too, and get 20% off when you buy your copy. It's totally worth it. Listeners, thank you for joining us. We'll see everyone again tomorrow.